as we said, Patricia is going to be speaking on steps 8 and 9, and those are: made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, and made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So, Patricia, we'd like to hear what you have to say.
Hi, everybody. My name is Patricia. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Patricia.
My sobriety date is March 13th, 1989. My home group is Larchmont, New York. I just want to mention that everything I said in the previous weeks, as well as tonight, is just one drunk's opinion. And if, you know, if your sponsor tells you something else, listen to your sponsor. I do try to stick to the AA literature as much as possible, but not exclusively. I also want to welcome, we have some visitors here. Welcome to you. And I think we have a couple of newcomers. And I remember very well what it's like to be a newcomer. I want to welcome you. And if you're anything like me, you thought you were here by mistake. You didn't feel very comfortable with this. You thought it's never going to work for you, and you don't really belong here. All uncomfortable feelings. That's what happened to me. But I tell you, just ignore that if you can, because if you stick around, you have a wonderful life. And if you go out, you have an awful life. And don't worry about how you got here. You know, I early on was trying to figure out if there was a genetic link in my family through the Irish, or if it was, you know, a horrible childhood. And, you know, the bottom line is if a donkey falls in a ditch, you don't worry about how the donkey fell in, you worry about how to get the donkey out. And these steps are about how to get the donkey out. So we finished up last week with steps 6 and 7. And I was over Easter baking some brownies, and I heard somebody kind of bumping the front door and crying at the front door, and I went out, and there was my big old cat, and she had a bird in her mouth. And, you know, that's her instinct. That's her instinct. You know, I felt bad for the bird, but that's the way it is. And instincts are God-given, and they're created for a purpose. Our problem was that our instincts went astray. So we have to go back to God and ask for His help to, especially with the worst of them, to try to change if we're going to have long-term sobriety. So what is a harm anyhow? Well, the 12 and 12 talks about that. It links those instincts to character defects. And it says, we might ask ourselves what we mean when we say that we've harmed other people. What kind of harms do people do to one another anyhow? To define the word harm in a practical way, we might call it the result of instincts in collision, which cause physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people. If our tempers are consistently bad, we arouse anger in others. If we lie or cheat, we deprive others not only of their worldly goods, but of their emotional security and peace of mind. We really issue them an invitation to become contemptuous and vengeful. If our sex conduct is selfish, we may excite jealousy, misery, and a strong desire for retaliation in kind. So there's really all kinds of harms. You know, when I was working, I was kind of grumpy at work. I was not really a cheerful person. So, you know, and people would give me a wide berth when they knew that. A harm could be withholding affection from somebody. It could be keeping somebody off balance by not really telling the truth. It could be punching somebody out. I never punched anybody out, but I was always very grateful I never had a gun at home, because my personality just went haywire when I was drinking. It could be not repaying money. All those are examples of harms. So what I want to go over briefly is, you know, what is step 8, when we do it, why we do it, and how we do it. Step eight is really nothing more than making a list. You know, just make a list. People often get concerned because they look ahead at nine. And I had to be kept on just eight. Just make the list. There's not a lot of pages in the big book and in the 12 and 12 about this step. I almost was thinking I might have to make something up, but since it's an honest program, and I have to get out of here right on time tonight. But it talks about when we do, after we complete step seven. It says, after we complete step seven, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. So when do we do it? We do it now. It's very clear. We can have people on our list like friends, business acquaintances, of course family, institutions, creditors, even if we are less than 1% wrong and they're 90%, okay? They need to go in the list. We owe them an amends. And the book stresses direct amends. You know, that's eyeball to eyeball as opposed to email or telephone. That doesn't mean there aren't occasions when we can't see somebody, but ideally it should be direct amends. And the goal is the best possible relations with everybody. It says, step eight and nine are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backward and try to discover where we've been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. And third, having thus cleaned away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being we know. And I often think about it as when I go to the grocery store. If I don't worry about who I'm going to see around the next aisle, you know, then I've probably made my amends. The big book says that the real purpose of the amends are, at the moment we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And we hear that over and over again. So amend is to put right. It's to make better. It's to change. I need to change. It's not to say, I'm sorry. I was not one of those people that said, I'm sorry, but I know there are lots of people in the rooms who say, sorry, 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 sorry. You don't want to just say sorry. That isn't to change. I was willing to make this list and to do the nine step because I still was very afraid of drinking when I got to this step. I was probably like about 9 months. I don't remember. I know it was less than a year. I also felt bad about some of my behaviors when I was drinking, and I wanted to just clear that up, particularly as it related to my husband and my son. And I was also very much a people pleaser. And you've heard me talk about my sponsor before, how she just really intimidated me. She was like 6 foot tall, and she had a PhD in psychology, and she thought she understood complete about human nature. And she was also the editor of the local paper. And so she had a way with words. So I was like very intimidated by her. So I wanted to please her. Also, the group that I was in, you weren't allowed to chair a meeting or have any, like, quote, senior service position like that until you had finished all the 12 steps. And so I wanted to get through that. So I made my list. It didn't take me very long. There were 12 people on my list, only seven originally, and more I remembered after I had passed the step. Five, I think, I remembered later, and my sponsor added one. So if you're good at math altogether, that's 13. I sat down with my sponsor after lunch to go over the list with her, and I remember she was sitting in a big wing chair next to my fireplace, and she kept dozing off. You know, we just had a big lunch. And I felt so uncomfortable about that because I thought, you know, maybe I'm not doing it right. If I'm missing something and she's not catching me. But when we got to how to do the ninth step, she perked right up, and I saw that she may have acted like she was sleeping, but she was really awake. And so step 9 is make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them and others. The first mention of the ninth step is in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which I've said before, this is my favorite book. And Dave talked about this. He was a couple of speakers ago, but I just wanted to add some color to it because it just is such a, you know, it's the first time that somebody made amends in AA. And it was the last week of May, I think, in 1935, and Dr. Bob was only sober 2 weeks. And, you know, he was living in Akron, and actually Bill was living with them at the time. And he had gone to, he was a physician, he had gone to the AMA convention for 20 or 25 years. And the convention came up and he wanted to go. It was in Atlantic City. And Ann said, oh no, she didn't want him to go. And Bill was for it because he said, you know, we can't live in a vacuum. We've got to go out and live in the world where there is alcohol. And you've got to be able to do that. And so Bill was all for him going. So Bob got on the train and he started drinking scotch basically as soon as he got on the train. And he boarded the train for Atlantic City on a Sunday night and he drank Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday without stopping. And so he basically left the conference and the next thing he knew he found himself at the train station in Cuyahoga, Ohio, which is the station of where his office nurse worked. I know this kind of thing very well because I would take the train from New York City where I worked and I was supposed to be getting off in Larchmont. And sometimes I would miss Larchmont and I'd end up in Greenwich, Connecticut. I'd have to cross and come back home, take the train the other direction. So his office nurse, Ann, picked him up and they brought him home. And they started a 3-day sobering up schedule. And at that time, that schedule involved tomatoes for vitamins, sauerkraut for vitamins, and Karo syrup for glucose and energy. And he was a surgeon, he was a rear admiral, and he was scheduled to do a colon rectal procedure at Akron Hospital. And then the story picks up here in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. It says, at 4 o'clock in the morning of the operation, he turned, looked at me and said, I'm going through with this, Bill recalled. You mean you're going through with the operation? I've placed both the operation and myself in God's hands. I'm going to do what it takes to get sober and stay that way. At 9 o'clock, he shook miserably as we helped him into his clothes, Bill said. We were panic-stricken. Could he ever do it? Was he too tight or too shaky? It would make little difference. His misguided scalpel might take the life of his patient. On the way to City Hospital on the east side of town, Dr. Bob held out his hand from time to time to see if it was shaking, and it was. Just before they stopped, Bill, who had his practical side, gave him a bottle of beer. Bill and Ann went back to the house to wait. After many hours, Bob phoned to tell them that the operation had been successful. Still, he didn't return right after the call. Had he got down to celebrate? Ann and Bill had no idea. They could only wait. Finally, Bob came home. He had spent the hours after the operation making restitution to friends and acquaintances in Akron. The bottle of beer Bill gave him that morning was the last drink he ever had. So that was the first mention of making direct amends, and that was Dr. Bob. So amends means to make it right, and if there's money involved, we have to make it right back to whatever the amount was. And that can be a pretty large undertaking for some people. The tendency here is to fight against that and say, gee, are there no exceptions to doing this? There is one exception, and that is if it were to harm somebody else, if an amend were to harm somebody else. The book says we cannot buy our own peace of mind at the expense of others. So if you have an affair with a married man and his wife knows nothing about it, you don't go and make amend to the wife. Because having the affair was self-centered to begin with, and telling the wife about it would be perpetuating the harm at your own to make yourself feel good. So it says, it does not make lighten our burden when we recklessly make the crosses of other heavier. So my sponsor took some people off of my list because I would have been hurting them had I made amends. It's very important to have a sponsor to do this for me because I had very poor judgment even at this point. It's important to have a sponsor in general, but specifically to do the steps and 8 and 9 very specifically. Good judgment, a careful sense of timing, courage, and prudence. Prudence means marked by wisdom. Are the qualities we shall need when we take step 9? Well, I had none of those. I did not know timing. I made one of my amends when I was still in rehab. I did not have much courage, and I had no wisdom or prudence. I would think it would be very difficult to walk around today, April 13th, with a knapsack full of amends that you haven't made. I would find that very, very hard. I don't think I could live a happy, sober life if I hadn't made the amends. So we do the step, and when we're done, then we pick up anything else later on in 10, step 10. So my sponsor prepared me for making the amends, you know, pretty much telling me what they should be, what I should say, when I should do them. Sometimes it goes very well and people are very excited for us and very happy. And other times, the book says we get a cool and skeptical reception. I had one cool and skeptical reception. All the others, people were just pretty happy. But it doesn't matter what the reception is. We say our piece, we do it, we want to put things right, we tell them we're in AA, we don't argue, we don't rehash the situation, we just say our piece and then we listen. Alternatively, we don't grovel. You know, we're proud, sober people and we don't need to grovel about this. We're doing the right thing. But it's important, it was for me, to have no expectations as to how it was going to roll out, just to do the amends. The purpose, too, is not to restore a broken relationship. I had some people on my list that was really underneath my motivation, was to restore a relationship, and my sponsor took them off. Some people divide their list into people that are, they're willing, yes willing, maybe willing, and never willing, or people that they're willing to do direct amends to, and indirect and ongoing. I didn't do all that. My sponsor just had me do a list. She assumed I was going to be ready as soon as possible to do them all. So the first person that was on my list was my son. He was 3 and a half when I came in. And I think he had a full exposure to AA ever since he was a little kid. He would come to open meetings. The way we do anniversary is we have a cake once a month for everybody, and somebody brings it up with the candles, and we sing happy birthday. And my son was often the person that brought the cake up. My amend was really that I was an uneven mother. Sometimes I was a fabulous mother, and if I needed a drink, that was my priority. You know, I remember coming home one day from working in New York City, and I just needed a drink very badly. I had been caught in a traffic jam coming home, and I remember jumping in the shower with a glass of wine and putting it on the shelf and thinking, something is wrong. You know, the water is going in this wine from the shower. This just doesn't seem right. But As much as I loved my son, I had to have that glass of wine before I could really pay any attention to him. So my amend was really an ongoing amend. When he was in high school, he would often go into New York City, take the train in with his friends, and I would get one of those calls, you know, like at 11 o'clock or midnight or 1 o'clock, "Mom, can you pick us up at the train station?" And my answer was always sure. And, you know, I would go and I would pick up four or five kids and deposit them all home. And I always thought of that as an amend, you know. That was an ongoing amend to him, as an example. There were others, but my husband was the second person who was on my list. And I have to say that when I stopped drinking, a lot of my character defects that involved my husband just stopped. But I also was still, I had still others to do. So I made direct amends to him, but it was also ongoing. The only negative response I got was from a friend of mine who, we had been friends for years and years and years. She was actually in the delivery room when my son was born. And about a year before I stopped drinking, I had just decided, for whatever reason, I have no idea, that she was not loyal enough to me, and I just cut her off. I just said, "I don't want to be friends anymore. You know, you're off my Christmas card list. Don't call me." And then I wouldn't talk to her. So, you know, the book talks about that cool and skeptical reception. The generous response of most people to such quiet sincerity will often astonish us. Even our severest and most justified critics will frequently meet us more than halfway on the first trial. Well, she wasn't really willing to meet me more than halfway. When I made amends to her, she said to me, "I cried every day for a year over what you did to me." And we gradually, on her terms, built up the friendship again. But I'd have to say for maybe 10 years, she didn't trust me. Every time we took a trip together, we did something together, she said, "You're not going to leave me again, are you? You're not going to throw me aside again, are you?" And I said no, and I meant it. And I had to listen to that for years, her saying that. And I figured, you know, that's what I need to do. I just need to hear her out as many times as she needs to say it. Flash forward, you know, that was 30-some years ago. She now lives in Florida, and she has Alzheimer's. And my phone number is at the top of her speed dial, and she doesn't realize that sometimes she'll call me four and five times a day, you know. And I talk to her each and every time, you know, unless I'm driving or something. Because that's the commitment I made, you know, that I would just stick with her, and I'll stick with her until she, you know, till the end. I was in, last fall I was in Europe for 3 weeks, and of course she has no conception of time, so she called me in the middle of the night every day. And, you know, somebody said, "Why don't you just turn your phone off?" And I said, "No, you know, I can't." Old boyfriends were taken off by my sponsor, and that was because boyfriends fell into one of four categories. One, they were purveyors of beer or wine. That's where why they were a boyfriend. I was too immature or self-centered to say, you know, "I just really want to be a friend." I couldn't say that. I didn't know how to say that, so I was really using them. I kept them hanging around if I needed a date for an event and I didn't have somebody, you know. And then I would often use one boyfriend to make another one jealous. And so I never had really one healthy relationship with any guy. And of course, my motivation was to want to get back in touch with them, and my sponsor took them all off, every one of them. I did have an ex-husband, I think I mentioned that before. We were only married for 6 months, and I kind of believe that if you've been married 6 months or less, it doesn't count. But He lives in Cincinnati, Ohio. I wrote him a letter and read it to my sponsor, and she approved it. And I got an absolutely lovely letter back from him with pictures of his kids and his wife, and we're good. We're good. My father died before I could make amends. So at the funeral, I had gotten, a 90-day coin, and we all had time individually with the casket, you know, one-on-one in the room. And so I put the coin in his casket, and I wrote an amend letter and put it in the casket with him. And my brother basically had the same experience, and now he's here in Gate of Heaven, and every year we take our coins and we bury them at his gravesite. My brother says, "I have the upper right, you have the lower left." And that's our amends to our dad. I did have, when I was in nursing school, there was a girl who, she was the roommate of a good friend of mine. And I can't tell you that I did anything really terrible to this girl, but I would go in her room and I would talk to her roommate, who was my friend, and I would virtually ignore her, you know. I really snubbed her in all, it was like I couldn't be bothered with her. And that bothered me. All these years, it really bothered me that I had done that. And actually, it was just last year that I mentioned it to somebody, and the person, because we were having a reunion coming up, and it was coming up again for me. And she said, "Well, just go and sit next to her and, you know, say, 'Shirley, what's going on with your life?' and listen to her." And so that's what I did. Actually, I have an amend that Leslie helped me with. My brother was telling me one day of the amends that he made, and I was telling him amends that I made. And I said, "Well, you know, I broke into this uncle's house one time when I was in high school, and I lived in his house for a week. He was in Florida, and he had a case of scotch in the basement, and I invited girls over to drink, and then they didn't have their heat up because they were away, so it was really cold. So after, you know, whatever number of days, I went and stayed with a friend, and I took a bottle of scotch to the mother as a, you know, as a home, you know, housewarming type of present, you know, good villa girls, you never go into somebody's house with that something in your hand." But I never made amends to my uncle, and my uncle now and my aunt have been dead for years, years. Do you remember this, Leslie, me telling you about this? And it was at the time where it was Erie Gives Day. And so what I did was I made a donation to Erie Gives Day in their honor, and their son is a priest, and I sent him money to say some masses for his parents. That was it. I had a friend in nursing school who, again, wasn't on my original list, but I thought about it later. I found whenever you go to like a reunion of some sort, people's names come back that you don't think of, you know, when you're doing the original list. And I had a friend in nursing school that I borrowed her clothes terribly. I mean, I wore her clothes more than she did. And I just felt really bad. She had this one really great outfit, and I wore it all the time. I don't think she even ever got to wear it. And so I said to her, you know, "I'm really sorry that I did that. I really ruined your..." It was a leather jumper, and it was a cool thing. And she said to me, "Are you kidding?" She said, "I have felt so guilty all these years. I borrowed your yellow sweater, and I washed it and put it in the dryer, and it shrunk." I said, "We're even." I've had some sponsees who've had some interesting amends, sponsees and litter mates. I have one friend who drove her kids' friends drunk when she was in high school. And her sponsor said, "You know, you can't really ruin your kid's high school experience by going to the parents and saying, you know, I drove your kids drunk." So she makes a contribution to Mothers Against Drunk Drivers every year. I have another friend whose kids, her two boys were 5 and 7 when she came in, and they were really too young for her to make amends. And later in life, they had some mental health issues. And so when she would go, She would very honestly and humbly tell the story of her drinking as a way of making amends to their therapist and their counselor. I had a sponsee one time who called her mother every day for money. She was like 50 years old. And for her, the amend was to call her mother once a week just to ask how she was, and not to mention money. And I think I mentioned last week that I have another sponsee in New York who is finally ready to make amends to her ex-husband. This is like 20 years later. He was on the never list. But now she says, you know, I've had so many new revelations, I'd like to go back to step four and start again. So that's great. That's fine. The key is, of course, willingness, like so many of the other steps. And don't anybody ask me how you get willingness, because I have no idea except to pray for it. I have a friend in New York who's in AA. He's a Catholic priest, and he made a list of people who he owed amends to, and he was not willing to make amends to any of them. So he was also at the time he was going through a period of discernment to try to decide whether he wanted to stay a priest or not. And so his sponsor said to him, put that list on your pillow, and every night get down on your knees and pray for the willingness, and then put the list back on the pillow. And in the morning, pick up that list again and pray again to be willing to make amends. And shortly after that, one of the people on the list called him, was in town and wanted to have dinner, and he went out to dinner with the guy, and the guy had apparently four or five drinks, and then he made his amends. So he said the rest were easy for him. Just an interesting point, the Pacific Group in LA, which has like, you know, 900 members or something, they have a finance class once a week with people that have successfully gone through their financial amends, and they work with people specifically on how to structure your financial amends. You know, the husband and wife have to go together, they have to have one account, they only use their credit card, their debit card once a week, they don't use credit cards. You know, they have a whole system to get through people's financial amends, whether it's the IRS or student loans or family or whatever. And they believe that something really spiritual happens when you start to pay the money back. Now, step nine also has the promises in it. And I know people have gone through that before. I'm not gonna read each promise and talk about them. I'm just going to talk about a few maybe that are like more important for me. The big book says if we're painstakingly about this phase of our development, that's step 8 and 9, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. So the first promise was fear of people and economic security will leave us. That was why I liked alcohol, because it made me very friendly with people. I could be very gregarious, you know, I wasn't shy. People would actually comment to me when I wasn't drinking. They would ask me if something was wrong because I was so quiet. There was such a difference. When I was drinking, I would sit in the kitchen before we'd go out to a cocktail party, and I'd drink a couple of glasses of wine just to get ready to go out. That has left me. I don't know when, but I don't seem to have a fear of people anymore. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Before, the way I handled a situation was just to take charge of it, to take control, to get it done, you know, to tell everybody else how to do it, often not very well. And now I have the ability to just be quiet. When we were thinking about taking my mother's car away from her, and all six kids met with her in a conference room to try to talk to her about, you know, why we thought that might be a good idea. I was the only one that didn't say anything because I just wanted to hear really what everybody else had to say. And I knew, being the oldest and kind of being in charge, if I had spoken up, then everybody would have just fallen in line. And we really needed to make that decision collectively. The other way is to hold on to emails and texts. And if I feel like something's astir, I don't send an email or a text for 24 hours. And that 9 times out of 10 I was smart to hold off. There was a guy that came to one of our meetings one time. He wasn't a member of our group. He was a member of a neighboring group. And we were on this step, and he said something. He said about when you speak or not. He said, you may have heard this. He said to ask yourself when you're getting ready to speak, is it kind, is it useful, and is it necessary? Does it have to be said by me, and does it have to be said now? And that really wipes out 90% of what I do with open my mouth. So, and we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Well, you know, first God stopped me from drinking, and now he keeps me stopped from drinking. And he's helped me learn underneath about the causes and conditions, which obviously I'm still learning. You know, it's I can see changes between 10 years and 15, 15 and 20, you know, even 1 year. You know, you learn so much about yourself in these rooms. And so that really brings us to step 10, which will be next week.
Thank you, Patricia. So now we have some time for questions and answers. If there's anybody that would like to ask a question, please raise your hand. I'll bring you the microphone.
Hi, friends. My name is Sergio, and I'm an alcoholic. So my question to you is, do the acts that you have to, that you feel you need to make amends for, necessarily have to be while you were drunk, or could they be like an after effect of when you were drunk, like if you were hungover and rage just got the better of you or something like that?
Yeah, that's a good question, Sergio. Any amends, any that you owe, drunk, not drunk, partially drunk, getting over drunk, as early as you can remember before you drank, any amends, because you want to clear up all that. You know, so you get the buzz. You want to get rid of it all. Okay. Good question.
Hi, Jim, alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Thanks again, Patricia. Another great week. So, in keeping with the amends topic, is there a particular category, have you found, that people tend to try to steer away from that amends?
I'd have to say finance, because some people do owe a lot of money. You know, I had one sponsee that she and her husband owed the IRS huge amounts of money, and I had no experience with dealing with that. So she hired a lawyer who had experience so she could pay it back. But she didn't really get to that for many, many years because it was so, you know, overwhelming to her. So I'd have to say financial amends.
So do you think that's fear-based?
Yeah.
And probably all those things, and selfish and all that kind of stuff. Okay, thanks.
Shana, alcoholic.
Shana.
I just wanted to know, I always am curious, like, what's the difference, you know, after I got sober, like, every time, I apologized, you know, for everything I've done, and what's that, you know, what's the difference between that and then when you actually do make amends? I mean, I know there's obviously a difference because I'm going through the steps now, but like, I don't know, I'm just thinking, is there a difference in the apology? Is there a difference in how you say it? I know there's probably a difference in who you are.
Yeah, she's asking, is there a difference between apologizing and making amends?
Yeah.
And there definitely is. Apologizing, just to saying I'm sorry, you know, amends is to change and to put it back to where it was and to say I was wrong. There's a difference between, you know, I apologize and I'm wrong.
Thank you, that makes sense.
Who else has a question?
Paige, alcoholic.
Hi, Paige.
Can you give an example of an amend that you worked with your sponsee when it wasn't really clear whether she should or shouldn't make an amends and how you figured that out? Because I've had that quandary so many times. Yeah. It's just not clear. How do you deal with that?
Yeah. I had a sponsee one time. She was like a 90-year-old woman. And when she was a kid, her younger brother died. And she did nothing, you know, to influence his death. But yet she felt tremendous guilt about it. But I couldn't see any reason. We decided she would write a letter to her brother and go to the gravesite and read it. That I guess that falls into that category. Yeah. There's also people that are so overly scrupulous, you know. We're either one way or the other.
Anybody not in the front row?
I miss that.
Or if you're on Zoom.
This is the classroom.
All right.
Oh, Kevin.
I got to represent the road, Kevin.
Thanks, Patricia. Thanks for everything. Have you ever encountered, you know, when you're first sponsoring somebody, where they look at this, you know, they look at the amend step and said, I got to do this amend step, and you've got to slow their roll as far as them trying to, well, they're under lack of understanding of how and why the steps are where they are and where you make your amends in the order that you do, not like when, you know, just not just to alleviate your own comfort, but I had the experience where a friend of mine's son was introduced to the program and just started making amends. Mm-hmm. He landed up in prison for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And I've since come to grips with, or my friend has come to grips with me, because, you know, it was my program and it was my fault that he is in prison. And I was just wondering if you had any experience with that, of trying to slow somebody's roll down before they actually really needed to be making amends.
I can't really remember anybody, Kevin. It's usually, for me, just the opposite of kind of goose people to keep going, you know. Sorry, I don't have that experience.
That's it from, oh no, we got somebody else in row two.
Row one representing row three.
Hi everyone, Gretchen Alcoholic.
Hi Gretchen.
Thank you so much, you did an incredible job. And thank you for clarifying that it starts with making the list. Because I think, you know, yeah, sometimes we get lost in, you know, the fear of what's to come yet, mm-hmm. as opposed to doing what's right before us. Is this on?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like I need it, right? Anyhow, so my question is, because one of the things you had talked about is where it says in the big book where you can make an amends to me later, Kevin. where it talks about except when to do so would injure them or others.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had situations where individuals have had to make an amends to their significant other, mm-hmm. but there are times within that they want to get more specific in detail as to what they're making the amends for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so how do you direct people in that? I mean, when you're making an amends to, say, you know, your partner or whatever, mm-hmm. the case may be, somebody very close to you that's lived it with you,
mm-hmm.
do you believe it's necessary to, you know, have this laundry list of everything that you go through to make that amends?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is that you talk to your sponsor about it, who should know you the best. But then there is a line in the big book where it says something to the effect that, you know, if your spouse doesn't know all the details, the who and when and why and how, you don't get into that. First of all, you could be bringing another innocent third party in, but what good is it going to do? It might make you feel better, but it's not going to help them. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll make this brief. Did you ever make amends to yourself?
I never did.
No?
No. I did not put my... Remember the sponsor that I had? She was not likely to put me on the list. She was very, you know. No, I didn't. Think I should have? Maybe. Anybody else?
Any last questions? If not...
All right.
Thank you, Patricia.
Going to...